Hey, this episode is brought to you by SunsetLakeCBD.com. It's Cyber Monday. But in fact, well, I can't tell if they're having basically an extended Black Friday sale or if they're calling it a Cyber Monday. It doesn't matter. Head to SunsetLakeCBD.com today. For today only, it's 30% off of all products and 70% off Keef. What is that Keef stuff, Matt?
Keef is the very fine stuff you'll find at the bottom of your grinder. It's very potent, so that's a pretty interesting sale they got there.
I can just hear Matt already thinking like, hey, will he hear me if I'm clicking on my keyboard during the show? The sale ends tonight, so act fast for huge savings at SunsetLakeCBD.com. For me, I got to say, like, it is a race between the tincture and the salve as to what I use more. I'm using the salve for more stuff.
Like, I used the dropper the other day. Is that the salve?
That's the tincture.
Oh, wow.
And I use that. The tincture I do for sleeping, which has been fantastic. It has got me almost totally off the Ambien, which I'm psyched about because awesome. Now I can remember, you know, my kids' names. And the salve has been fantastic. For other people use it for sore muscles. For me, I use it for eczema. I mean, it's not called for that, but I just slapped it on and I can't stop using it for it. And it's been quite helpful, actually, but your mileage may vary on that one. But everybody speaks very highly of the smokables, including our resident expert, Matt. And we have gummy bears that are fantastic, full of the CBD, infused coffee with CBD, which is like my weekend blend. Check it out. And today is the day to check it out, folks, because it's 30% off of everything. It's 70% off of Keef. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Check it out. Regenerative farming practices. They have great business practices as well. It's a great company. I couldn't feel more comfortable promoting this product and this company than I do. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Check it out today. Okay, now time for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Monday, November 30th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Joe Biden fills out his economic and comms teams. We got the good, the bad, and the ugly. Meanwhile, as experts fear a holiday COVID surge, Moderna's continued trials have excelled, and they now seek emergency authorization for their vaccine. Meanwhile, the CDC releases a Kansas study showing the efficacy of mask wearing for communities. We are now 12 days out from a government shutdown and months overdue for a COVID economic relief package as evictions loom, food pantries struggle. Iran promises retaliation for its assassinated nuclear scientist. Republicans start to pretend they're all about deficits again. And they also, meanwhile, vow to obstruct Joe Biden's judges. The Supreme Court bars New York State from reimposing COVID restrictions on religious gatherings. And New York, L.A., Denver, San Francisco piloting programs to send mental health pros instead of cops. And in wake of the Black Friday strike, Amazon workers in Alabama want a vote to unionize. Meanwhile, speaking of strikes, almost 250 million people are striking in India across all industries and largely against neoliberalism. Meanwhile, donors sue over the Trump failure to find voter fraud. Sorry, guys. You got taken for a ride. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you had a calm and not necessarily abbreviated Thanksgiving, but a smaller one than you're used to having. But I hope that it was still pleasant and enjoyable. I hope you did not have to travel very much for your sake and also for the sake of the health of the country. I am here with Emma Viglin. Emma, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was pretty good, pretty low key. Had some wine, had some mashed potatoes, my favorite Thanksgiving food, bulk at. Lots of gravy. I had it on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And no, last night I didn't have it, but the leftovers, they were potent.
I have a feeling there were probably a higher degree of leftovers this year for everybody than normal because people are not used to calibrating.
Food. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, yes, I enjoyed myself quite a bit. I also drank and then ate a little bit and then just mostly sweets. It was mostly sweets for me. That's basically what I did. I had about three pies. What about you guys? Brandon, Matt?
Matt, you want to go first?
Yeah, I ate a bunch of a fudge my mom sent, so that was delicious. And I had some mahi-mahi that my girlfriend prepared, so it was pretty delicious Thanksgiving.
The classic mahi-mahi fudge Thanksgiving dinner that people have, of course.
The settler dinner, yeah.
Thing that, you know, you're a part of the left's broader war and hatred of Thanksgiving with that kind of dish.
Matt's from North Dakota, so you know that's the traditional Thanksgiving meal. Right. That
mahi-mahi is super easy to get in North Dakota.
The mahi-mahi and the fudge. What about you, Brendan?
Had a very traditional Thanksgiving with my parents at their apartment and small group. I wore a mask the whole time because I had been traveling in the past few weeks. Got a lot of grief for wearing the mask, but showed them some graphic images from Twitter, and they agreed I should be wearing masks. So
there you go.
It was good.
Good for you. All right. Well done. Well, let's tune into what was going on at Fox and Friends. And meanwhile, there was a lot of people who traveled. Airplane travel. It's one thing you travel in your car and you don't get out. I mean, that's the one thing. You travel in your car, you don't get out. You go to places, maybe I saw my parents who have been more or less like isolated. I mean, sadly, but super isolated. And so, you know, as long as we didn't stop with the kids and we've been very careful, we get testing and whatnot that we went to visit. So it was very small Thanksgiving, but we were there. But there are a lot of people traveling on planes and whatnot. Here's Fox and Friends arguing about mask wearing, which is
still
it's stunning. Up sound, please. We, incidentally, are working on a new video system that is going to be rolled out, hopefully, within the coming weeks. Ooh, so you're going to enjoy that.
I'm learning about this right now.
Oh, yeah.
Said one thing over the weekend that I thought was kind of troubling, but probably realistic. And she said, if you traveled or if you were with family outside of your normal bubble, just assume that you've got the coronavirus. And she suggested that people get a test within a week if they were out and about and traveled this week. And if you're in your house around your family members, you should probably wear a mask so you don't infect your family.
Yeah, if you traveled, then you have to play by the rules. And we hope that everyone does just to stay safe so that we don't infect other people. That's great news about the vaccine. They're bringing it in on those airplanes so that it's ready to go as soon as the FDA does approve this. Dr. Jeanette Neshwat, she was talking about the vaccines earlier on Fox and Friends First. Watch this.
don't want to rush this vaccine. So once they meet on December 10th, the earliest that these vaccines will be shipped out would be the very next day. So that's what we're hoping for. So far in the trials and the studies that we've had, which included thousands of volunteers who have already received the vaccine, there has been no severe life-threatening allergic reactions or adverse reactions. So that is very reassuring. And I do believe by, you know, the last 2 weeks of December, we're going to be getting these vaccines, and it's ultimately going to save lives. So I'm super excited about that.
The New York Post is reporting that in the UK, they just got 2 million more doses of the vaccine, and they're rolling it out in just a few days, Will.
You know, I think this point can be underlined, highlighted, repeated over and over. It is absolutely stunning how quickly this vaccine made its way to market, to distribution. Operation Warp Speed, an absolute success. That should be repeated over and over. A process that normally takes years has been accelerated to take place within a couple of months. I will say this, Steve, I'm not ready to start wearing a mask around my family. I might be like a lot of Americans. Right. I'm going to hold on to a little bit of this, I don't know what we'll call it, individual spirit, but I'm not going to be putting on a mask around my family.
I'm just reporting what the experts are saying.
No.
Because, Will, think about this. You go out and you're at grandma's house, and then you come home, and Dr. Burke said, if you have in your unit people who are over 65, you got to protect them. So you would hate to have, you know, somebody my age give it to somebody a little older or vice versa.
Yeah. But then if, you know, I mean, you give it to them, that would be bad. But if you wear a mask, you won't have your individual spirit.
And you're not that cool, right? Right? You're not the Marlboro man smoking cigarettes and being the stereotypical American cool guy.
You're all of a sudden, you're one of the drones. You're not like, I'm going galt with this whole thing with the mask. I mean, this is just absurd at this point. That the slightest precautions that you can take, you wear a mask when you're around other people. I mean, look.
Especially after coming off a plane. I mean, they were really doing the bare minimum there.
The bare minimum. Meanwhile, this guy's, I can't believe how Will Kane is inhibiting his individualism by sitting so far away from his hosts.
I know. Why don't they go lick each other's faces?
Well, see, that's a measure that sort of accentuates your individualism by separating you from the rest of your coworkers. So you get more space.
When you get more space.
Yes, they call it the Randian desk.
There you just in case you are one of those people who have family members who are still saying the absurdity of mask wearing is not helpful. Report out by the CDC. Researchers analyzed the coronavirus infection rates in Kansas following a statewide mask mandate. They found that counties that chose to enforce the mandate saw their cases decrease. Counties that chose to opt out saw their cases continue to rise.
I don't believe it.
I know this is hard for you to believe. I know it's very hard because for a long time, Emma was a huge mask denier. She didn't even believe that masks exist.
I know. I was all about the gaiters. I could believe in those, but because those, you know.
But the mask, she didn't even believe that they were real things.
Right,
And then we had to show her some masks, and then she was like, okay.
Cool.
Dr. Aaron Carroll, a professor at Indiana University School of Medicine, so it's not the coastal elites, said this adds to the growing body of evidence that says large, widespread masking helps to slow the spread of COVID.
Why are we still doing this? We're still doing this. It's November, now, soon to be December. I mean, and they're talking about a vaccine. Like, by the way, isn't it coincidental that the FDA is meeting the day before the government is set to shut down on this vaccine?
Good idea that they do that. But now they just caution. The findings were consistent with declines in coronavirus cases observed in 15 states in the District of Columbia. However, this is not a peer reviewed. It was not a controlled experiment. But the Kansas mask requirement went into effect on July 3rd when coronavirus cases were rising across the state. But 81 counties opted out of the mandate as permitted by state law. The other 24 counties, which account for the majority of the state's population, chose to require that masks be worn in public places. Though rates were considerably higher in the 24 counties that required masks, this is over the course of the 2 months, they brought the growth of cases under control and even reduced them. The counties that didn't require masks saw their cases increase. So on average, the counties that required masks saw a 6% reduction in cases. That is calculated as a 7-day rolling average. In contrast, the counties that opted out saw a 100% increase.
6% decrease, 100% increase. I'm not a math lady, but can you break that down for me, what that means?
Well, I can only tell you that there was, in places where people didn't wear masks, the rate of infection grew exponentially. And makes in sense. Places where they wore masks, even though there was more people, right? These are more populous counties, it went down. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen, that you can point your, I mean, I guess it's a little bit late to tell your crazy uncle at Thanksgiving, but you can Zoom and tell them and let them know that they should be wearing masks. Meanwhile, I wonder if those guys are going to give up their individuality and get a vaccine on that Fox and Friends. I have a feeling they might.
They might.
I have a feeling we'll
they might. Well, it's because Operation Warp Speed was such a success, and it's the Trump vaccine, which is what they're going to start calling it, by the way. That's a, just a preview of
if
their
that gets
next
them to
narrative.
Take it, by all means.
Fine.
But just a note, they are already, Pfizer is already shipping the vaccine. They have already started to produce it. They've been producing it this whole time. Not the whole time, but they started very early in the production. They are already shipping it. Understand that that is all happening with the help of over $1.5 billion from the U.S. government. So Pfizer wasn't in Operation Warp Speed. They took the money on the back end, but right. They took it up front to get it out there. Money's fungible. They didn't need it because Biogen, the company that they were working with, got $500 million from the Germans.
And that's different from the Moderna vaccine.
And Moderna has actually got the money directly from the U.S. government.
Yes.
Now, it's good that we had two or three of these companies working on this. We could have also even had a fourth, and that could have been the U.S. government, just taking the money and also trying to develop it. But
well, that would be socialism,
I
Sam.
Understand.
Jesus
right.
Christ.
Sorry about that. Hey, folks, it's time for some sponsors. Flu season often lines up with our holiday plans. We don't want to get the flu this time around. Liquid IV can help support your immune system with increased hydration and essential vitamins. It's perfect for staying hydrated on holiday flights, which you should not be taking anyways, but also on long road trips and in situations where maybe you are drinking a little too much alcohol and you need to get hydrated. One stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water, you get 2 to 3 times of the amount of hydration as plain water. Liquid IV has the optimal ratio of glucose, sodium, and potassium, delivers water and nutrients into the bloodstream, the perfect balance to help you hydrate more quickly and more effectively than water alone. They have new flavors, sweet and juicy guava, crisp watermelon. I have not tried that.
That sounds good.
That does sound good. And comforting apple pie. Liquid
That's
IV.
Right up your alley.
Yes, it is. Liquid IV contains 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana. Now, for me, you guys know which one I like. This is it right here. I got the matcha going because it gives me a little energy and it keeps me hydrated simultaneously. They've got great other great products. I can't remember what the name of the – there's one that has like a – I think it was a limited run. I can't remember what the flavor was, but I try them all. But I got to say, I go with the matcha as like my go-to. And that's what I'm doing in the morning. It's just like competing between the coffee and that stuff. So I get a little dehydrated with the caffeine and I rehydrate and speed up a little bit with the matcha. But back in the day when I used to travel, I would take a couple of packs in my travel bag and kept me hydrated on flights. Liquid IV is available nationwide at Walmart in the beverage section, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com. Use the promo code MajorityRep at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order. Use the promo code MajorityRep at liquidiv.com. Get hydration today at liquidiv.com. Promo code MajorityRep. Also, I do not wear bras. However, we have been promoting Third Love for quite some time. Third Love, you can find your new favorite bra with high quality, comfy styles starting at just $45. I've had multiple.
It's a great site. I have some of them.
Do you really?
I actually do. Yeah.
My daughter just got some from there too. She was.
I'm sure.
She was.
I'm
over
sure
the
she'll
moon.
Be happy and would and loves that you're saying this on air.
Yes, she's excited about it. Every third Love bra is made with signature memory foam cups, no slip straps, and a scratch-free band. And there are more than 80 sizes. So they have an online fit finder quiz, helps you find the right size and styles that's right for you. Over 15 million women have taken the quiz to date. Third Love helps you identify your breast size and shape, and then it finds the styles that fit your body. They have a perfect fit promise. In fact, this is one of the big things. So we've had two different Third Love official triers in the past, official ones.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the number two said. The idea that I had 60 days to try out bras drew me in. But in the end, I don't think I've ever had a better experience buying clothing online. Certainly not when it comes to bras. The fit finder worked like a charm. The choice of styles, amazing. Both bras I ordered were a perfect fit. They are incredibly comfortable, cute, and subtle. I don't know what else you want to hear, folks. You can yes. check out all the exclusive styles at thirdlove.com. Like I say, they have modern stripes to their number one rated 24/7 classic t-shirt bra. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now, they're offering my listeners 10% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/majority. Find your perfect fitting bra. Get 10% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/majority for 10% off today. And don't forget, you get 60 days to return it if you don't love it. Exchanges are free. And lastly, this I do use. And it's a great holiday gift. I think I sent one of these to my dad a couple of years ago. Harry's Holiday Shave Sets. Here are some of the reasons this holiday season you should think about Harry's. Harry's makes super sharp blades. They last. The holiday shave sets come in prepackaged, handsome holiday-themed gift box. Plus, Harry's blade refills are as low as $2 each. So that gift, that person that you gift, will be saving money over time. It is the gift that literally keeps giving.
Wow.
Yep. Plus, they're backed by 100% quality guarantee, which means if he or she does not love their shave, you're going to get a full refund. You can make it personal by engraving the razor handle.
That's cool.
Yep. And 1% of each sale is donated to charitable organizations. For me, the thing I love best about Harry's, well, I'm not going to lie. It's not as expensive as the crazy shavers that you get in the thing. But also, I like the look of the shaver. It's like a classic. I got a classic chrome-looking handle, not the buffy like Rambo that you get at the stores. The blades have the thinner blade heads, and that's important for me, my asymmetrical nostrils. So Harry's, I love. They've been supporting this show for a long time, and they also make me clean up nicely when I go and do something that I need to clean up for, which is less and less these days. This holiday season, new customers can get $5 off plus free shipping on any Harry's Limited Edition Holiday Shave Set when you go to harrys.com/majority report. Sets come with a weighted handle, three razor cartridges, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover, all packaged in a handsome holiday gift box. Don't give socks this year. Delight the guys in your life with Harry's. To claim your $5 off plus free shipping, go to harrys.com/majority report. And lastly, folks, don't forget you can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you get the whole show commercial free. And also, we've got swag at shop.majorityreportradio.com.
Swaggy swag.
Yep. And just a reminder, this show plays on Peacock on the Choice Channel at 5 p.m., 10 p.m., and then it runs through the evening. So if you miss it on any of our other outlets, the first hour of this program plays on Peacock, and it's got better graphics. I don't know what to tell you. It's got nicer graphics.
Yeah, I love the look of it on Peacock. It's nice to check out.
Yep, check it out. And then also, come for the Cedars, stay for the Medians or Lena.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
Mehdi is killing it with these interviews.
Yes. Yes, he does some great interviews over there, so check that out. All right, let's get into Joe Biden's picks, give you a sense of where we're at with this. I mean, nothing's sort of like barn burning in terms of these picks one way or another.
Except for in Twitter land.
In Twitter land, things get a little bit uptight. But first, before we go there, let's check in with the outgoing president, the lame duck, the extremely agitated lame duck, Donald Trump. Here he is. This is clip number one. He's asked the question, and he wants to make sure that he's just going to soak in. You know, it's like, you've had times where it's like, this is the last week or two. I'm in, a senior in high school.
Right.
Or this is my last time in college, or this is my last time at this job. Or, I got a couple more days of my vacation. I went to the lake this summer or something like that.
You're taking it all in.
You're trying to soak it all in. That's what Donald Trump seems to be doing here.
This election was a fraud. I mean, they have Biden beating Obama at Obama's vote in areas that mattered in terms of the election, in swing states. And yet he's losing to Obama all over the place. But he's beating Obama in swing states, which are the states that mattered for purposes of the election. So, no, I can't say that at all. I think it's a possibility. They're trying to, look, between you people, don't talk to me that way. You're just a lightweight. Don't talk to me that way. I'm the president of the United States. Don't ever talk to the president that way. All right, I'm going to go with another question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he's just playing the hits as he leaves office, right? Going after reporters, a sense of grandiosity, talking down to people, being abusive. He just wants to remind everybody of the charming guy he is before he leaves and apparently might announce a run of in 2024 that he may not follow through on during Biden's inauguration. We'll see.
I can't imagine a greater thing on the wish list of Democrats for 2024 than Donald Trump spending the next 4 years.
2022.
Or 2022.
Save the House for the Democrats. Donald Trump still being a part of the public lexicon in a way that in a greater way than they anticipated. And then the Democrats could potentially get a do-over for the last 4 years and actually tie the Republicans to Donald Trump.
They can try and do it this time. We're going to be talking about all in the coming days. We've touched on this over the past week, the borrowing that the Trump administration is doing. They changed the rules on civil service back in October, and they have been shoving in a lot of political appointees into civil service jobs. We will talk about that. Report out of the Hill over the weekend was that Democrats are now assembling lists to find out who these people are and where they're located in the context of the government. Because
and hopefully isolate them.
Isolate them. And so that the Biden administration, when they come in, look, this is the thing that I think it's hard for people to fully appreciate. This is a massive, massive undertaking. Our government is huge, and you're talking about tens of thousands of people. And you don't know when you're the president, or even when you're a cabinet secretary, even when you're the sub cabinet secretary, you're looking to execute policy, and you send it down to the agencies. The wrong person in the right position can inhibit these things from happening. And
that's the design of this undertaking by the Trump administration.
Without a doubt.
And it's super unprecedented too, right? They're even with past Republican administrations who were arguably worse than the Trump administration, right? They weren't deliberately hiding political appointees in these specifically service positions. I don't see it. I see it as way more explicit than anything that Bush did before.
Well, I mean, they changed the rules on civil service. I mean, there was certainly attempts in the past to do it. with the Bush administration. But remember, this administration came in. Steve Bannon got in front of CPAC 2 months after the election, or I should say the inauguration, I think it was, maybe a month, and said, our agenda is to deconstruct the administrative state. And they have gone a long way into doing it. And they are continuing with that project. We're also going to see a whole host of executive orders that supposedly are gearing up in places like immigration. We just saw they changed the federal rules on how you can execute people for federal executions. We're going to see more of this. We will track it and we will get to it over the coming days. But let's catch you up on the latest appointments from the Joe Biden administration. They have announced that now there are two basic entities that provide broad economic advice to the president. One is the Council of Economic Advisors. This is outside the White House.
Right.
This is traditionally, it was, and by traditionally, I mean maybe 10, 20 years ago, this was a group of economists coming from different disciplines. I study wages. I study industrial policy, et cetera, et cetera. That come together. They also would range in terms of ideological. Not a huge range. It's America. But some range. And the president would get advice from them. Now, since that time, the National Economic Council has been developed and has become in many ways a little bit of a gatekeeper, right? So this position, the National Economic Council, was headed by like Larry Summers. And so when they were getting all sorts of advice on how big to go on the stimulus following the financial crisis in 2008, Larry Summers sort of functioned like a funnel.
Right.
And narrowed the potential options that were given to the president. Now, this is a big deal with a guy like Biden, because Joe Biden's not exactly the man with the plan.
He's not exactly ideological in many ways, which can be a good thing and can be a terrible thing. It really does depend on who is in his circle, which is why these are so key.
Yes. I think he is he is always, according to what I have read, has always tried to stick his flag in the center of the Democratic thought, essentially, and where the conventional wisdom has lied and are laid. And so the value of opening that, what they call the Overton window, right, which is the sort of like on one side of the ledger, is really important, because as the left margins go further left, the center also drifts left.
And ostensibly Biden.
And ostensibly Biden. So first, the good news on the Council of Economic Advisors. People who follow this stuff, and I'm thinking, Mike Konzel is one of those people. He's a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. He was involved in Occupy. He says all the people who understand how important executing the recovery and getting to full employment will be, they will have a strong antibodies against cynical debt hysteria and conservative boilerplate. So he is talking about Cecilia Rouse, who's going to chair the Council of Economic Advisors. He's talking about Heather Boushey, who is an economist who will sit on that. He's talking about Jared Bernstein, who will also sit on the Council of Economic Advisors. Would have been better if some of these people were inside the White House, but it's unclear. Jared Bernstein has been advising Joe Biden since the Obama era. He was brought on as his top economic advisor, one of them. And Bernstein worked quite a bit on developing some of the stimulus following the 2008 crisis. He wanted more money. But again, it was shut down because they were worried. The political people were worried that somehow we can sell $800 billion, but not $1 trillion, as if, right, these numbers are magic in some way. But it's possible he'll have more, access to the president than someone typically on the Council for Economic Advisors. He studies labor relations. Bushi studies, I think it's wages. And Rouse did some real strong work on student debt.
Yeah.
So these are good people who are not going to defer to let me be clear too. The whole name of the game is to make sure that we don't have people who are going to be seduced by the calls for austerity,
which there will be. I mean,
of course.
Burying the lead here is that Brian Deese might be.
Well, we'll get there.
Okay. Okay.
But before we get there, we're already seeing reports now of Republican senators all of a sudden rediscovering the deficit.
Yeah.
Now, modern economic thought says that when interest rates are low, where the deficit is not inhibiting in any way, or the debt for that matter, inhibiting in any way growth, you need not worry about it. And in fact, modern monetary theory suggests that we can just print money. Deficits are not bad.
Right.
Deficits and debt held by the government is not bad, because that means on the other side of the ledger, there's more money in the private sector at a time when you need it.
Right.
And there's fears of inflation, but these fears of inflation, ever since we got off the gold standard, are really something that the Fed can control quite easily, and you can control with tax policy.
And the good news about Biden was that Yellen, who was in the past kind of sympathetic to the arguments that you're outlining here, has updated her view to be a bit more progressive in this instance. But then you have Biden also putting BlackRock executives and other
people. Well, we're going to get to Deese in a second. Because yeah.
But even more than that, it's the Adeyemo guy. Who's going to be right under Yellen and is more pro-austerity.
That's right. And so all of this is going to be about how can you push off the push, or how can you fight off the push for austerity with an administration that is like, you know, it's like a big sail, essentially. And the question is, which wind is going to be caught in that sail as to where we're going to go with this? And in one other pick before we get to Deese, Neera Tanden, who folks might know from Twitter.
I don't, because she blocked me.
She is been chosen to run the Office of Management and Budget. Now, in the past, Neera Tanden, and you can see this video online, has, particularly during the Obama administration, she was pushing this line of having to look at basically the grand bargain, which was, we're going to cut Social Security, we're going to cut Medicare, we're going to cut Medicaid, and we'll get tax increases. Now, I think Neera Tanden, and I have been critical of her in the past, without a doubt, like as recently as, 12 hours ago on Twitter, myself, much to the chagrin. Some of it was like, I just made a sort of a funny observation.
Yeah. Well,
Neera Tanden, let's just get rid of the sort of the petty stuff first. She is one of, And look, this is not an ideological thing, because I have this feeling for a lot of people who I see on Twitter. But on Twitter, she's a little bit unhinged.
And apparently it was reported she might have been abusive towards Faz Shakur and other people in her workplace. And she's aggressively combative with the left, specifically the Bernie Sanders wing. I mean, to me, what bothers me about this pick is not that ideologically Tanden is some deficit hawk who's going to, push for austerity or whatever and budget like a Republican. I mean, she's better than some of the worst people that were apparently being considered for this position. Ideologically, I guess. But it shows to me that Biden is either trying to send a message to the left with this, because there's no one more vocally aggressive and combative with the left than Tandon, or he's that oblivious, which I kind of tend to think it's the latter, because they're so steeped in DC groupthink and so dismissive of the Bernie wing of the party that they're not paying attention to how Tandon has become this symbol for anti-leftism on the internet. But why reward her? I mean,
well, I'll tell you, this is my sense of that. First off, so I tweeted out something just making a joke about how
you're not allowed to do that.
She had tweeted more than Donald Trump. And the response was quite virulent. I'm more concerned about her past talking about cutting Social Security and Medicare. But with that said, I think certainly OMB has generally been where the worst of the worst, sort of like CFO-ish type of person would be in there and inhibit the ambitions of the White House. I don't think she'll do that. I think she's a soldier. And I think that she is going to help with the Biden agenda. If we can get the Biden agenda to be anti-austerity, and I don't think that OMB is going to be a problem. I personally, I think that your assessment of like they knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was I would much rather have someone who performatively has been highly dismissive of the left, disrespectful to people, attacking, than someone who's going to go in who nobody's heard of before. They don't have a Twitter account, but they're going to go in there and they're going to push pro-austerity policies.
Sure. I mean, but she didn't want the Clinton campaign to push for $15 minimum wage.
Without a doubt.
She was in favor of the exact cuts that you're talking about. I mean, she was central to the racist attack on Obama from the Clinton campaign in 2008. She has a terrible record. So I don't know how much worse you can get, to be honest.
Well, no, but there are
worse.
You can definitely get worse. If you look at the people who have been in that position in the past, you can certainly get worse. And in fact, there is, but again, like, let's make a distinction between someone is an a-hole on Twitter, which I certainly have at times been, but, and what they're going to do in the job. And on some level, if the sell was like, we're going to stick it to the left by putting someone that people on Twitter don't like, as opposed to we're going to stick it to the left because we're going to put in Bruce Reed, who was one of the founding members of the DLC, who has an ideological, I just don't think that Nir Tandon has that much of an ideology that is that strong. As opposed to a Bruce Reed, who has an ideological, like, sort of deep-seated love affair with austerity.
Yes.
And a deep-seated desire to cut Social Security and Medicare. And that has is great. And here's the reality is, I don't know if Nir Tandon is going to, because she's so closely associated with the sort of the same type of activity, not so much her attack on the left, but like her being a Twitter warrior, is going to pass Senate confirmation. In which case, we could end up with a Bruce Reed.
Again, though, it's pick your... Like, she's also representative of this think tank corruption in D.C. I mean, I understand your point, and I agree with it, that Reed would have been a worse pick. But she's been at the center of the Democratic swamp for decades at this point, and so I don't like what that reinforces as well.
Yes.
And it makes her prime exactly for what you're saying.
This is
for a tough confirmation hearing if Biden even tries to go that route.
Well, this is the milieu, as it were, of Democrats that we've got. I mean, established Democrats who have largely been in the system, as it were, whether they were hiding out at West X, that a consultant firm essentially waiting for a potential Biden administration, or they were at CAP, which was, you know, at one point considered the Clinton administration in exile. This is the milieu. And so on a narrowly tailored way, it could be worse, and it still could be worse. I don't know who the second choice is if she doesn't get confirmed. But let's move on to the sort of I think clearly even worse.
Yeah.
Which is this guy, Deese, Brian Deese. He was a senior Obama administration official. The Obama, this whole administration is like Obama.
Obama retreads.
Yes.
And rewards for past Obama service, which is interesting because I would have imagined that Biden would have wanted to put his own stamp on things, especially if there was conflict with some of the more Chicago type, you know, the people Obama brought in. But
I don't think that Joe Biden has a stamp.
Right. But that's the point. Like, he doesn't have an orbit in the way that Obama developed it. And then Clinton obviously had for decades and decades.
Obama didn't have an orbit either.
Until
he adopted essentially all the Reubenites. He adopted Clinton's orbit. And so what we're doing is we're getting sort of like second generation, third generation Clintonites.
Hillary Clinton's finally president.
Exactly. Well, no, we're not quite there.
No, I'm joking.
For instance, I mean, and David Dayad makes this point, and I got to say, the American Prospect has been doing an amazing job on this. If you want to know who's going to get picked next week for a position, you can read it today in the American Prospect.
I've subscribed to their newsletter.
Not literally, but I'm saying, you know, but he says, look, he could have chosen talking about Biden. He could have chosen deficit hawk Bruce Reed to run the Office of Management and Budget. Instead, he chose Neera Tanden, notorious for tweeting entirely too much, but not in the same league as Reed on austerity.
However, Deese.
He could have chosen Lisa Cook to chair the Council of Economic Advisors. Instead, he went with the slightly more center-left Cecilia Roust. Bernstein and Bushi, like we say, we'll round out the CEA, and that's in general a good group. And then he says he could have chosen Tim Geithner ally Lael Brainard for Treasury Secretary. Instead, went with Janet Yellen, an economist who has made tight labor markets her life's work. So she's much more inclined.
I'm good with the Yellen pick for Biden.
More concerning, he writes, is the presence of the new vampire squid BlackRock. Key policy-making roles. Brian Deese, the managing director at BlackRock with several roles in the Obama White House, is on track and has been named the director of National Economic Council. And your buddy, Adelwell Adeyemo, who served as BlackRock advisor, CEO of Larry Fink's interim chief of staff in between Obama economic team jobs and president of the Obama Foundation, will become deputy treasury secretary.
Which seems to be an attempt to check Yellen from the right.
I mean, on some level, that is to sort of make sure that, you know, there is that she doesn't get too like, you know, into the idea of job creation or, you know, because this dynamic, and people should understand this. The Fed has, or I should say, well, Treasury works with the Fed and does a lot of banking regulation. But when she was at the Fed, when the Fed has always had a dual mandate, that dual mandate has been to keep inflation in check and to increase or decrease unemployment as much as possible. And for a long time, the conventional wisdom was you cannot get less than 4 or 5% unemployment. Like, naturally, the economy cannot, like, it can't function.
Right.
But in fact, it turns out, yes, you can. You can get significantly more or less unemployment. You can go down to 3 and nothing happens. And for too long, the Fed was focused on maintaining inflation. Even they would set inflation rate, like, we can't go over 2%. And if we do, we've got to tighten money. And then they get to like 1.5 and they go, well, you know, we should just do it in case we get to 2. Right. And they would tighten money. And they would forget about the duality of that mandate, which was to help employment. Well, Yellen sort of reversed. She became a little bit of like an inflation dove and more of an unemployment hawk. And not dramatic, but enough that it was pretty significant. And hopefully at the Treasury, she will continue with policies that promote unemployment. Or I should say the diminishment of unemployment.
That don't promote unemployment.
But getting back to Deese, you know, there are some people who say, well, you know, the guys, I've seen, you know, sort of conflicting suggestions. You had Bill McKibben had a thread on Brian Deese, who he knows personally, apparently married him, but he doesn't, he basically has stayed away from him in, when he was in positions of authority, and agitated from the outside. He seems to think that Deese's heart is in the right place. But for me personally, I don't take the word of people who know people personally.
Right. I mean, I'm sure he's a lovely guy who worked at BlackRock and was supportive of Arctic drilling and fracking on public lands. And I mean, BlackRock is this behemoth that has, I mean, I saw in the prospect a 5% stake in over 97% of S&P 500 companies. And now there are two at minimum, right? Now I might be undercounting BlackRock executives heavily involved in the Biden administration.
Yep.
Both under Yellen and now as the top economic advisor to Biden in Deese. And they are also involved in Amazon rainforest deforestation, I believe, and all of the issues there with climate change. So, like, you can't welcome, I think, executives and members of this group that are, I think it has the highest level of investment in fossil fuel production in the world, BlackRock, and then also be promoting this decently forward-thinking climate agenda. It seems odd to reward these kinds of people and bring them in, especially if you're going to get some backlash. But they're more concerned about the backlash from the right, who, and they don't care about BlackRock,
right?
Than they are from the progressive left, and so they're fine with it. And it's, I just don't like that it seems like they're setting it up so there's a check on somebody who might go in a slightly left direction.
Well, I mean, that is the nature of this. And I think to a certain extent, it's not just a question of like, I think, you know, I think the attitude is different from what you're talking about. First of all, I don't think it's like a question of rewarding. I think for them, it's like, look, we need people who've been here for a long time. And of course, they're going to go to BlackRock, and that BlackRock investing in being one of the greatest investors in fossil fuel industry. I mean, understand, when you invest in a fossil fuel industry, what you're investing in is the viability of them taking fossil fuels out of the ground 10, 15, 20 years from now. And so a departure of investment in that would signify that these companies need to change and reorient towards sustainable energy. And so that's the power of a BlackRock in particular. In 2008, he was an advisor to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. He endorsed deficit reduction and fiscal discipline. He said at his confirmation hearing for deputy director of the Office of Management and Budget in 2013 that his top priority would be working on a comprehensive deficit reduction agreement. That was when Obama had his turn to austerity, which would include entitlement reform. That's Medicare, Social Security, maybe Medicaid. He gave speeches, paid speeches, on, quote, how the budget process can actually be used to reform entitlements and tax code. He was also a key supporter of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which in many respects also hurt Clinton in her attempt to win in 2016. The other thing, he was also the primary mover of the Jobs Act under the Obama administration, which is short for Jumpstart Our Business I can't remember what the last one is, but Jumpstart Our Business Enterprise. It rolled back basically corporate oversight. It allowed for more investment that is not under the auspices of the SEC. It led to mini IPOs, which was rife with fraud. I think at one point they had to like stop allowing for those. And he also was the one, the top advisors who said, choose Merrick Garland. Mm-hmm. Because if you choose Merrick Garland, the Republicans will be really ashamed for having not, for having rejected a moderate. You know, that, I mean,
that kind of thinking.
That kind of thinking, which is, I mean, that is strictly a political question, right? I mean,
it's maybe ideologically wrong, and it's also bad politics.
Bad politics.
Right.
Very bad politics.
And so is this austerity stuff, right? Especially in this moment. So Biden needs to be thinking long term. I don't know if that's in his wheelhouse here, but Democrats should not be preemptively talking about austerity measures and balancing budgets right now. I mean, the amount of economic investment needed by the federal government into the economy should be paramount and should not be held back at all, purely if you want to win elections, purely if you want to lay the groundwork for 2022 and 2024, which Democrats seem incapable of doing.
But you can also make this argument, I agree with you, but you can also make this argument on just sheer economics. The fact of the matter is the economy needs stimulus. And it does not matter. There is no evidence that our debt or our deficit is in any way inhibiting growth or inhibiting anything that we care about on an economic level. I mean, it is not in any way promoting inflation. And so it makes good economic sense as well. It's just that, look, there are differing priorities. And the fear of inflation for bankers and for people who loan money is quite high because as inflation rises, the value of their loans diminishes. And so they will block that at any cost. Also, we also know Alan Greenspan at one point said it when he was chairman of the Fed, that part of his job is to create insecurity amongst workers because insecurity amongst workers depresses wages. It diminishes the ability of workers to change jobs. That's a great
sociopathic thing.
It's a great agenda for a very, very narrow few sociopathic people.
You're right.
But for the rest of us who want the ability to like live not just a comfortable existence, but one where there is not this constant sense of economic insecurity and where we don't rely on things like, you know, our job for healthcare. And so that's where we're at in terms of Biden's picks. He also has an all female comms team, which is commendable. Fine. I think the Trump administration did too. I think at one point, although it was
I'll say this
hard.
Is a woman, I don't care, but I mean,
it would be nice, you know, there was broader, but there seems to be doing a decent job of diversity. I would like to see, you know, obviously. In my administration, people would be a little bit more to the left. There wouldn't be any talk of austerity. There wouldn't be talk of any austerity 2 years down the road,
right?
Or anything like that. And hopefully there won't be here. But lastly, let's just take one moment. Well, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we will talk about what's going on in Georgia. Because much of what we're talking about still is contingent upon what happens in Georgia. The ability for Joe Biden to get his nominees okayed by a Senate is going to largely rely on the outcome of Georgia. Now, there's some thinking that on the like health and maybe the economic ends or maybe the national security and the health ends, it's going to move quickly, but some of these economic positions, Republicans are going to want austerity hawks because, and deficit hawks, because that's the Democrats doing their work for them.
I know. That's their ideology.
Exactly. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a moment. This is pretty fascinating. There's a report out today that Donald Trump Jr. has started a new PAC. Now, ostensibly to get voters out in Georgia, correct?
Ostensibly, but it's all about drumming up things about voter fraud for Trump. So I don't know how that does that, right?
I mean, whenever I hear the words Trump and New and PAC, I just hear, oh, they've figured out another grift.
Surely.
Right? I mean, the Trump people are already being sued. There's not the Trump per se, but
they're sending out emails to their supporters saying, please donate to our legal fund, actually, in fine print at the bottom. It's to pay off our debts.
Right. A guy named Fred Eshelman sued the Houston-based True the Vote, Inc., which promised to investigate, litigate, and expose suspected illegal balloting ad fraud in the 2020 general election. This is according to Bloomberg. Eshelman is the founder of Eshelman Ventures, LLC. That sounds like a hedge fund to me. He said he regularly and repeatedly asked for updates on the initiative, but was met with vague responses, platitudes, and empty promises. Mm-hmm. True the Vote said its efforts, including filing lawsuits in several swing states, collecting whistleblower complaints, and increasing GOP legislative support in key states, and conducting, quote, sophisticated data modeling and statistical analysis to identify potential illegal and fraudulent balloting. Some statistical modeling. And I think that if you give money to these people, any of these people talking about this, you're going to get ripped off. But that's just my model.
Your model shows that?
My model shows that.
Your algorithm.
This is the interesting turn of events that's taking place in Georgia. Play this clip. This is clip number 5. This is Rona McDaniel. She is the chairwoman of the Republican National Committee.
And niece of Mitt Romney?
Yep.
No idea. I was coming to Georgia for that. Yeah.
Switching the votes, and we go there in crazy numbers, and they should have won, but then they're still.
We didn't see that in the audit, so we've got to just that evidence I haven't seen. So right. We'll wait and see on that.
How are we going to give money and work when it's already decided?
It's not decided. This is the key.
No.
It's not decided. First of all, David Perdue still has a 100,000 vote lead over John Ossoff right now with the certification. So if you lose your faith and you don't vote and people walk away, that will decide it.
So you see what's going on there.
Yeah. It's a real dynamic that I don't know if it'll affect anything, but something to keep your eye on.
They have messaged very effectively to their people that the vote is rigged. It doesn't matter. It was stolen from Donald Trump. And you've got supporters who are, I don't know. Do you know anybody who's ever gone to like a Tom Perez talk?
No.
Like, I mean, I don't know anybody who's going to go out and hear the chairperson of a party speak. And if I did, I would imagine they're in the know.
Right. And well, they're as passionate as it gets, right?
Exactly.
It's also when you look at people who aren't voters, like data on non-voters in the United States, it's usually lower income people who feel neither party is representing them and it's not going to make a difference. And there's some of that dynamic here, right? If they don't vote, they think nothing's going to change. So,
you have people saying to her, like, why would we spend money and go vote when it's already decided?
Right.
It's already rigged. And she is, we are now, I mean, it's, they got time.
How is she going to thread that needle? She couldn't.
35 days out from the election, having to convince people that, like, not only is it important, this is an important election, but, like, no, you can vote. It will be registered.
This is the flip side to what we had to say post 2016 about, you know, rigged versus the home field advantage of the establishment.
Yes.
But the thing that is rigged for the Republicans is more people typically would vote Democrat, all things being equal and voting being, you know, easy. So that's the thing. Like, if we're just going to count all the votes equal, what's the point of voting? Because we're outnumbered by them, I think, is the realization some of them are having.
Yep. Well, we will talk more about this in the coming days. We will see you tomorrow. And for people who are sticking around, of course, we're going to head into the fun half of the program. We just said goodbye to the people from
Peacock. Right here
on your mug. There you go. All right. We're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half of the program, wherein I am going to, this should be interesting because I am actually going to have an agreement with someone who I have spent years very fairly critiquing.
Who?
Well, you're going to have to tune in the fun half.
Wow.
All right. We'll be back in... Oh, I should just say, first off, one, don't forget, you can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And two, check out Nomi Show. You can find the Nomi Key Show at on YouTube at youtube.com/the Nomi Key Show.
And just as we plug the Antifada, Jamie seems to be joining us.
And Jamie can tell you what's happening on the Antifada.
Sure. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
How was Thanksgiving, Jamie?
Oh, it was fine. I had to do a full quarantine. I did it for like 12 days, and then I got the PCR test, which is 98% accurate, so yeah. I could go see my grandma and my mom and not kill my grandma. They still treated me like I had COVID when I was there, which is fine. Like,
but they treated me like that even before COVID.
Yeah, fair. Fair enough.
What's happening on the Antifada?
Well, we had a bit of a programming change. So the interview we were going to run last week, we're actually going to run this week. So last week on the Antifada, we put out a lot of stuff over the break. We did an episode with the podcast Real Abstractions, where they talk all about, it's complicated. This is a complicated one, folks. Marxism without Marx, Marxology. I don't know. It's interesting. Check it out. Friday, we put out an episode of Talkin' Tina, which is Andy's side project about Latin American politics. And he gets an update on the situation in Brazil and what's going on there. And then this week on Wednesday, we've got an interview with Aaron Beninov, author of Automation and the Future of Work, about the jobless future, the actual causes behind that, spoiler alert, not automation, and what we can do to try to rearrange the world in a way that makes more sense. So patreon.com/theantifada. You'll find all that and more.
And Matt, you had a huge announcement this week.
Yes, and I can actually reveal the announcement for the MR audience. David Griscom and I launched a new show called Left Reckoning. It's on YouTube and Twitch, and we'll release the audio for our patrons. Yeah, it's very exciting, and we will actually be streaming on the YouTube page, the first inaugural think tank with David and I tonight at 7 p.m. So go subscribe to our YouTube channel, folks. We've already got over 1,000 subs, and we haven't even posted a thing yet. So wow. The response has been very nice. So thanks, everybody, for that.
Logo, dude.
The logo?
Talking about that logo.
My friend Grant really, yeah, you have to go see the logo online. You're at Left Reckoning on Twitter. But my friend Grant from up in a... I don't know if I have it super accessible right now, but I'll put it up later. Maybe when I plug it tomorrow, I'll put it up. What?
You're not by a computer?
Well, I am, but I also have to get ready for the, switch to the fun half here. So.
All right.
Well, good job.
You really want to see that logo, Sam. Geez.
Well, I get some questions about that logo.
I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, interesting.
It just, this incentivizes people to just go to their Twitter account.
Folks, see you in the fun half.
In for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman.
and the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danner?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense. Hey, fuck! Fucking reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Almost says what?
What
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black. African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black. Black.
See Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't not hustle.
Come on! Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy! I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Back. Africans are black. Black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black, black.
Come on! Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.